I'm Dave. So feel free to call in, and I might even get Adam Kern, who is the engineer here on most Sunday nights, to chime in, because he is a theater person. He's an actor. He also goes to the theater when he can, and he cares about the theater, which is important, too. So as Adam gets his headphones on and plugs in and turns on, let's see, your black mic. Can you do don't do black mic. Do orange mic is much, much better. Adam Kern, let's hear you.
Hello.
Hi, Adam. Thanks for...
Oh, it's wonderful to be on. I'm really excited.
Yeah, cool. You're not even sitting down. You're standing up. I'm so excited.
I'm standing up. I'm so excited. I can't contain my excitement. What were you saying? What is our memories about a Broadway show? Or
well, I was asking people to call in and either tell me about the shows they've seen recently on Broadway, or even better, if they want to call in and say a Broadway memory, like some show they saw them when they were a kid, or when they were dating and going to the theater in New York. Some theater memory.
Yeah, I have a very vivid theater memory, actually. It was a weird thing, because my mother and I arrived way, way early, intentionally, to the city one day to see Phantom of the Opera, and I was a little kid, so I was really, really excited about that. And as soon as we got there, I mean, we must have walked like maybe two blocks, and the sky just opened up, and just with the hardest downpour ever. And instead of like nice dinner and all these things, we spent like almost 2 hours in a Duane Reade, like just stranded there. Till this day, I cannot pass Duane Reade without remembering that.
Oh.
And it's just, but you know what? It turned.
How was Phantom?
Phantom was great.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
cool.
Fantastic. But
I've had to sit through theater in wet clothing, and it does. You kind of forget it halfway through the first act. But during that first act, when it was still warm, and then you're sitting there, and it starts to get cool on you because of the air conditioning, and you're feeling like the cold, wet clothing, it does take away. I remember one time I went to Shakespeare in the Park, which and there you're obviously not protected from the elements, so. I was squished. It was a rainy day, sitting there for a rain delay. We sit there, and my sneakers were squishing, and my socks were all bleh. So I said, and I do what I do always at the theater, because I like to be comfortable. I take my shoes off.
Mm-hmm.
I like to sit there and have my dogs breathe, so my brain can at the same time. And I just remember someone in front of me turning around and seeing my wet sock foot and going, yeah. Put your shoes on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, my feet are soaking wet. My sneakers like mush. I'm like, please put your shoes.
That's a bad situation for all parties involved.
It's not like my feet smell. I don't think. I hope. That was my memory.
Yeah, I don't think the sense towards your own body is quite as strong as it is to others.
Are you telling me something, Adam? Are you hinting at something?
Perhaps a shower would be in order.
Perhaps
whatever.
It would.
None of my business, really. But, I remember that very, very clearly. I also have to yin and yang it a little bit.
Sure.
I went to London last year. I'm a very lucky guy.
Yeah.
I saw Glengarry Glen Ross, which was freaking phenomenal.
With whom?
With,
who were they doing over there?
Oh, jeez. You would know the main actor.
Kevin Spacey, right?
No.
No.
Well, that was in the movie.
No, but then he... Oh, no, he wasn't doing it.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But, it was Patrick something... I can't remember his name.
Patrick from SpongeBob SquarePants?
No.
He would have been doing
this
to Jack.
No. That wasn't that Patrick. Squidward? No.
Mm.
No. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It was awesome.
Actually, Squidward would be good in that
Squidward
character, except the Kevin Spacey role isn't in the play.
He would
be
good for Jack Lemmon's role.
Yeah.
Squidward. Weasley.
I don't want to steal these leads. You know,
Oh, God. Oh.
It's a great play.
Jack Lemmon proved himself to be, just in my eyes, with that movie, just such a great actor because of how visceral I loathed him from that movie.
You hated Jack Lemmon in that movie?
Oh, he was despisable. Yeah. No.
You hated Alec Baldwin in that movie.
No,
Alec
I loved
Baldwin
Alec Baldwin. That's one of my favorite scenes in my first legitimate acting monologue as well. Comes from that. Let me have your attention. Yeah, I love that. It goes 6.5 minutes of that spiel.
It's
I
genius.
Love it.
Yeah,
no, Jack Lemmon is just such a weasel. Corrupt and he's horrid.
Of course he's corrupt. He's desperate.
Yeah.
Desperate men get corrupt.
No, it's... Yeah, but anyways.
Anyway. Yeah.
Okay. Retracing our steps back to London.
Yeah.
The day after the event I'm talking about was Glengarry Glen Ross, and that was wonderful. The day before, the day of that I'm talking about, I was excited to see the oldest running play in London. I was like, yay!
Mousetrap?
Yeah, the Mousetrap.
How is the Mousetrap?
Let me tell you something about the Mousetrap. I bless the heart of whomever wrote it in year whatever it was, but...
It's Agatha Christie.
Agatha Christie, thank you. Yeesh, I should probably know these things. But anyways, Agatha Christie, I'm sure it was a great play for its time. Let's put it that way. That being said, in this time, in this day and age, it is so painfully outmoded, outdated. The jokes are, like, so old. They would make you blush. I mean, they really would.
That would be tough.
Yeah.
Because I still tell the fireman red suspenders joke and get a laugh out of that.
Even the diver hood would blush. I mean... You fidget in your seat at some of the jokes are so obnoxiously old and embarrassing. And this was the only time, may it be the first and the last time, that I sit in a theater. There were empty seats everywhere.
Oh, well.
Everywhere. I mean, I felt like it was me and maybe 90 other people in the entire theater.
And a theater that was
takes
seats.
Away... Yeah. So much from a show, it would have been better if it was a packed, you know, crowd at an even worse show, which again, I can't even fathom. By the end, when they tell the big surprise, and I'll at least not spill it, but you can look it up on Google, you just don't care. You don't care. It's like a murder mystery or whatever.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And you just don't care. Man. And then he reveals himself, and you still don't care. You're like, this is not shocking at all. Why? Wow. Why did I sit through this? And you know what?
Well, they're playing out the string. That thing's going to be running after you and I are gone, perhaps.
I don't think so. I think I'm going to be one of the last people to see it. I'm telling you.
Well, you saw it last year.
Exactly.
So there have been at least, like, 8 other people who have seen it since you have.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, times add by the number, it's probably 80 people who have seen it since. But, no, it simply has to run away. It will. That is not an immortal play. It will not. My prediction, no more than 5 years. It can't.
Well, you can never tell what's going to hang on. By the way, Adam's getting over a cold. I had some throat problems earlier in the previous show. This is one of those. Must be the time of year. But you never can. I mean, there's a show off Broadway called Perfect Crime that has been running for a good 20 years or so, longer than almost every Broadway production.
Okay.
It's not a terrible play, but it's not a good play. It's just a dumb murder mystery sort of comedy thing. And in fact, the woman who co-wrote it and acting in it from the beginning is still in it. She's the co-producer of it.
Oh, what's her name?
Oh, I wish you wouldn't ask me that. If I had my performing arts insider in front of me, I would know. But the show's still going, and God knows, and it's in a small theater. So maybe every performance they get 30 people, 40 people. So and then there's The Fantastics, a lovely little musical, but should that have run 40 years? I don't
40?
Know. 40? It ran 40, it went away for 2 years, and then they brought it back.
Wow.
It's a sweet little musical.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess because the Mousetrap is that. It's just such a, you know, it's a murder mystery, and who's not intrigued by a murder mystery or by a whodunit, you know? But
it's there because it was there.
Oh, it was so embarrassing. It was embarrassing. I was embarrassed to be there. I was embarrassed to be there. I ate by far the single worst slice of pizza ever on this
Why would
planet.
You get pizza in England?
You know what?
You get fish and chips, or you get the Indian food there. That's
you
what
can
you
only
get.
Eat so much fish and chips, which is delicious there, but once you've had 3 fried meals in a row, you're not going to eat a fourth. I couldn't. And so I tried to eat some of their fare, and I've been told that, in London, it's not like it used to be, and blah, 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 they have lots of great food. Yeah, they do have lots of great food that costs God only knows how much at the finest restaurants. Yes, it's available. But for an arm and a leg, and then some.
Try and find the Friendlies or an Arby's or something like a Beefsteak Charlie's, and good luck. Yeah.
My best meal in London?
Yeah.
I shudder. Subway sandwich. It was a Subway sandwich. Their food is well, again, their fish and chips were good.
Oh, well, then it wasn't the best meal in London.
Plentiful. Oh, my God. They give you, like, a whole fish.
Did they give it to you in a newspaper, though?
No.
Oh, they do it the new way?
Yeah.
In the old days, they used to wrap them in newspaper. That was kind of a cool thing about
it. That's disgusting. Yeah. Okay.
Couldn't you get a decent burger in a pub?
No. 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 I just don't... I don't like that. I mean, a very moderate amounts of that kind of food do I like.
Yeah.
Anyways, no, the food there in London is just terrible. But, I mean, Mousetrap was unfortunately my worst
theater
experience.
Well, what else did you see when you were in London?
Well, those were the two. I only have so much money. But, yeah.
And you're spending on the Mouse? Well, I understand. The seeing history, I get that.
That's it. That's really what sold me. And I had no idea it would be that antiquated. And I thought that people bought tickets to it. It's such a unnerving thing to sit in. And it's a gorgeous theater, too. Gorgeous. I think it's called the Majestic. And it's fantastic. It carved everything.
Well, you know why? Because nobody's trod on the carpets for 15 years because nobody's come to see the show. I guess.
But
there's been no wear and tear.
the silly character is Christopher Wren, you know, like named after
and he
pretends that he's an architect too, and he's just this is the best adjective to describe him. He's daffy. He's just insane, like upbeat type A personality, and you just and it's so cheesy. Oh, God bless all of the actors' souls, because they're
getting paid.
They are getting paid, so I'm not, you know, crying over them, their welfare. But it does, you know what, on the same note, it does have to be a little tough playing to 9 out of 10 empty seats.
I know.
I mean, that's where your real professional valor is tested.
Well, thank God. I mean, knowing as I do, because I do a weekly cabaret show on at the Players Theater on McDougal Street in the Village. And sometimes we have a few people, sometimes we have a lot of people, but one kind of good thing is once you get up there and you're standing in your spot and you're in the light, you really can't see past the first row. So that sort of helps you. Only problem is if you're used to or hope for getting laughs and there's, you know, 20 people in the audience or as you say, 80 people in a place that seats 500 or 600, you know, you're waiting for laughs that don't come. So you may not see nobody out there because you can't see at all past the first row or two, but you know. You have a sense that, you know, nothing's out there. I'm just read something about the opposite. It's not really about the theater, but I'm reading the book by Artie Lang, Howard Stern Show.
Right.
No, it's quite.
Apparently, it's got really decent reviews, which.
And it isn't sick, crazy. No, I mean, there's some of that, but it's really about his life story and his relationship to his father, and it's quite touching.
Mm.
And he tells the story about his dad, his fondest memory of his dad, somehow managed to get him tickets during the 1977 World Series, which was half at Yankee Stadium. And, you know, father just sent away early in the season on the assumption that the Yanks would get into the playoffs. They did, and get to the series. So they got $10 seats all the way in the bleacher boonies. And just the feeling of what it's like, that Subway series on that crazy 1977-78 season, you know, with Son of Sam and New York being absolutely a mad kind of a place, and the Yankees being the one bright spot of everything, and then, you know, that year of Thurman Munson and Reggie Jackson, and the feeling of that full Yankee Stadium, what it was like, the sound, the energy, and great, great story of being all the way in the back of the bleachers, but the father was the type who could con and connive his way into pretty much anything. So by the last half inning, the Yankees were leading easily. Father brought his little son down right to the first front row. I mean, with everybody rocking and two outs and the Yankees obviously going to win. And the father says to little Artie Lang, he says, "Okay, what I'm going to do, if I run out onto the field, I'll get arrested and probably beaten up by cops. But if you run onto the field," and Artie was all of like 8 or 9, "if you run onto the field, the cops aren't going to hit a kid. So run over to the shortstop area, and I'll meet you there when I can." And so, you know, last out, easy out, every place goes pandemonium, you know, jumping up and down, the whole place rocking like crazy. And, you know, little Artie's thrilled because he's this huge Yankee fan, never felt so happy in his life, but he's also terrified that his father's actually going to do this. And his father's going to lift him over his head, put him on the field, and tell him, go, run. And so, of course, the father remembers, puts Artie, right, you know, lifts him right onto the field, and Artie's running around, and he's excited, but he's also watching other people stream onto the field, and the cops wailing away at them with clubs, and he's watching people, you know, blood streaming out of their heads, and people falling to the ground, and also jumping around, going crazy, taking sod out of the turf. And he said pretty soon, what goes to from being really exciting is he sits there crying because it's just pandemonium. He's terrified. And then finally, like 15 Jeez. Minutes later, the father makes it to the field and takes him home.
Oh, wow.
Great
Yike.
Story.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
And really not much amazing. To do with theater, although that is a kind of theater.
Well, you know what? I was just going to say, to segue back, I remember that, you know what, I don't have the best memories of when I was a child, and it's more of a sensory type thing. But I do recall clearly the first time I went to Shea Stadium and talk about theater, when because you come out of a tunnel also, you know, you always associate coming out of a tunnel with either football players or baseball players
or
professional
birth.
Athletes.
Yeah, right.
Well, or
yeah.
Birth. We're gonna be a little, but as a fan, you come out of a tunnel also, because in Shea, at least, you know, it was all darkened, and the way you walk is to both sides of you are the bleachers, but they're all covered up, obviously, and then you walk through a tunnel.
Right.
We were on the first base side. We were near first base, and it's dark, and then you get out onto the field, and I've never seen dirt so brown. I've never seen grass so green.
Yes.
Perfect. It didn't look real. The players, the Daryl Strawberry was playing, Mookie Wilson, Howard Johnson, Ron Darling, you know, Doc, all of them.
And they were bigger than life because
they
were on steroids.
And Strawberry was rail thin but tall as can be, and he just... And those pinstripes, the orange, the blue, everything was so vivid that it was theater. It was theater. You could not believe. You almost didn't want them to play on it. It looked so perfect, like a good dessert. You know, you hesitate about digging into it.
Right.
You know, it's just, I can never forget that. It's just, it's so ingrained in my soul, and it was a fine memory. Yeah,
wow.
My first Mets game. I have no idea whether they won or not, but...
It didn't matter in that...
It didn't matter at that
didn't even
point.
Matter when I was a Mets fan all those years ago, and the Mets were doing 450 ball, and not even remotely approaching the playoffs, because there wasn't even wild cards back then. It was just, you know, you either won the division or not, and you're out of it. And then, you know, I was a fan. I was a fan, up until the last two seasons in which they came. But, you know, this is supposed to be a theater kind of talk show, so let me also throw it back open to you folks. Hopefully listening in your cars or at home, please give us a buzz at the radio station, 631-888-8811, area code 631-888-8811, to talk about, since this is Tony night and we're just half an hour away from the Tony Awards, your theater experiences. And as we can see, theater can be very broad and far afield. It can be a dance performance as well, let's say. But I'm obviously, and I think Adam, are most curious about your Broadway and off-Broadway experiences. Have you seen anything really cool in the past few months? Did you see Billy Elliot? Did you see Hair? Did you see The Norman Conquests, God of Carnage, Exit the King, all these shows that opened during this season? Or did you see anything amazing in the past that you really, really remember vividly? Or even if you didn't remember the show so vividly, you remember the experience of going, whom you were with, how you got there, what you did after and before the show, anything that made that night or afternoon at the theater special, give us a call, 631-888-8811, 888-8811. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, by the way. I'm here with Adam Curran. It's 7:35 p.m. here at WGBB. The usual program that has been here for a couple of weeks is not on tonight. It would have been in Spanish. So, hola.
Bueno.
We can talk a little bit about West Side Story, because they do two songs in Spanish in the new revival.
Do they?
Yeah. That's the big quote-unquote controversy. the director Arthur Lawrence, who co-wrote West Side Story with Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein, he's directing the show.
Hmm.
And he said, well, how do I update it? How do I make it modern and relevant and more real? And he said, well, why don't we have the Spanish characters, the sharks, talk in Spanish part of the time?
Hmm.
And let's do a couple of the songs in Spanish, the way they would talk to each other.
That's not a bad idea, I guess.
It's not, I mean, he doesn't
not,
really
not
follow
groundbreaking
through.
Or anything, yeah. But...
And the fact is, it's not like they always speak to each other in Spanish, just sometimes. And they do
well,
two songs in Spanish, so...
That would be overkill if they always right. spoke in Spanish. I mean,
yeah.
that would be assuming that American audiences are bilingual, which...
Not yet.
Is, no.
Ten worders.
No. No.
Not even, not going
to
happen?
Never to a large degree.
We're
going to
be outnumbered.
So. I don't think fair, so.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Unless, well, we're going to have an influx of Russians?
And anybody who thinks that, I mean, I'm not, I don't mean to get political sure. or anything, but there's no way. English will and always be our main, our language.
Never say always.
Well.
You never know always.
Well, that's true. I don't know always. But for any foreseeable future, it is English, because that's what's kept our nation, you know, like, bound together, because it's so easy like that. You know, it's just, bing, one language, and as opposed to the EU, which they have to print out any official document in 20 languages. Literally,
yeah,
20
right.
languages. So, you know, even Canada, everything must be printed in English
and
French. And
well, but has it hurt
pain.
Canada to do that?
Well, Quebec almost seceded.
They didn't.
Yeah, but... they had a revolt on their hands, and it's...
Hey, we've got these idiots calling. I got a phone call
it's
2 days ago.
It's one part of the country that they predominantly speak French anyways, and that is in the Quebec area, so...
Yeah. No, but I mean, talk about secession. I got a call, just one of these pre-recorded calls is like, are you part of the Tea Party revolt?
Oh.
These idiot Republicans.
That was probably my mom. Sorry.
Is your mom an idiot Republican?
Yeah.
Even in this day and age?
Mm.
Ah, well, won't go there.
Yeah.
Won't go. So how do we get on to this? How do we stray to this?
Who knows?
Because theater strays to everything. That's the beautiful thing. It can stray to sports. It can stray to politics. Doesn't have to necessarily be so
defined.
It strayed
to
defined.
Susan Boyle. This with a...
Yes! Think about it. People who
that's
say...
Also my, that's also yeah. That's probably my favorite theater memory of all time. You know, aside from waiting in the Duane Reade for hours on end. Shopping for different umbrellas and stuff.
Was seeing Susan Boyle do her thing or seeing her break down?
Well, excuse me. No, seeing Susan Boyle on YouTube for the first time, that was very touching.
Yes, it was.
But, I mean, I'm talking about seeing Les Miserables in real life was deeply touching. I just, it just impacted me in a major way. I guess I had no expectations.
Right.
That always helps. I guess.
Yeah.
But the music is just... I listened to both the double CD regularly when I was a kid, and I am not... As you know, I mean, I'm very interested in the arts, and I act, and all of this stuff. But when I was a kid, not so much. It was just one of my interests.
Okay.
I would have a lot of rap CDs, rock, and Les Miserables double CD. That's how much I loved it.
Well, you know what?
You know?
That sounds unique... But if you go to a lot of people of your generation, you're probably about 15 years younger. Then how old are you?
27.
Yeah, I'm 45, so you're about 17, 18 years younger than I am. But the, I'm not a math guy.
Me neither.
But other people
take
would be like,
for
well,
it.
I've got Nirvana and I've got all these things.
Yeah,
well,
Nirvana.
Now and they have Rent.
Yeah.
So that would be their one. They wouldn't have Guys and Dolls.
Right.
They wouldn't have Oklahoma, but they have Rent. Or,
okay.
or one of the Bublil Schoenberg things, or the Andrew, or the Jesus Christ Superstar, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it works perfectly with my sister, who's 6 years younger than me, and that's, yeah, it's all, whatever, rap, rock, whatever, Rent. Boom.
Right, exactly, where that comes from.
All of them, too, not just one song. So
well,
was,
for a moment,
it was
Spring Awakening, too. That one sort of nudged its way in there for a moment.
Spring Awakening.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
It was his best musical two seasons ago, or maybe it was only one season ago. What was last year's best musical? Good Lord. Where's my sheet of paper? All my stuff I packed away because I thought I'd be off the air by 7. So, have to... There's your trivia for you. Hello, caller, WGBB. I'm Dave Lefkowitz. Adam Kern is with me. And want to talk theater?
Yes, I do.
Hi, who's calling?
My name is Pat from Brooklyn. I saw Hair.
What did you think?
And actually, it was great because I missed it the first time around because I was a little bit too young when it was first here.
Right, me too.
But I was still old enough to know I wanted to see the play, but nobody would take me, you know.
Well, there were naked people in it and stuff like that.
Right, that was a. But the interesting thing is, I only see plays if I can get half price, and you never get half price to a play that's up for Tony, except that. That evening that Obama was at a play, there was nobody in town, and I tried to see the play that he was at, but of course they wouldn't let me in there on the same day notice, even though the play doesn't sell out.
Right. Yeah.
But they did have Hair, so I saw Hair for half price.
Good, man.
And it was it actually, even though I saw it in reverse, I don't know what you guys think, but it sort of Rent reminded me of Hair.
Well, how do you mean in reverse? In other words, you saw Rent first a few years back, and then I'm not sure what you're.
I never saw Hair.
You mean you never saw Rent? Or
I saw Rent a couple of times.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
And then I saw Hair after I saw Rent.
Well, and so did I. I mean, as I said, I never saw Hair on Broadway. It hasn't been done on Broadway since like I think the early '80s.
Right. So I just saw Hair last week, right?
Right.
And did. Was there any? Did you think that there was anything about Rent that might have been taken from Hair?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
The whole idea of it being a rock musical about young people who are living on the fringe of society. I mean,
exactly.
Jonathan Larson was no fool. I mean, and Jonathan Larson was a theater person. He would have been very familiar with Hair. It's not stealing.
Yeah.
He was doing it for another generation.
That's true.
Speaking to that generation, the way Hair spoke to. The generation that it spoke to, although that was really the thing about Hair being a big Broadway success in the years that it was in the 60s and 70s, it was that it spoke to the parents of the kids.
Right.
That was what made it a hit, because the kids weren't going to the theater. They were busy, you know, tuning in, turning on, dropping out, not paying to go see a Broadway show. It was mom and dad who were trying to understand why they couldn't talk to their kids or why their kids couldn't talk to them. And they go to Broadway, and it was a way of saying, oh, I see, these kids are creative, they're musical, they're expressing themselves by wearing weird clothing and
right.
growing their hair and singing these really cool, catchy songs. That's what made Hair, you know, special back then, and I think also part of what makes it special now.
Now, intergenerationally, it's very interesting, the issues they were dealing with in Rent as compared to Hair. Hair, you were talking about Hair and the way you dressed, and maybe, you know, some drugs were involved. But of course, with Rent, it was life and death.
Right. Well, it's certainly life and death in Hair, and they make that clear in this
in
revival
terms of
now.
War.
Yeah, I mean,
being drafted, that's true.
The most powerful scene for me is the end of the second, the first act of Hair, which, if you just listen to the old CDs of the cast recording, you don't really know what's going on. You figure the kids are all just taking drugs and having a freak out and dancing
yeah.
and celebrating and taking their clothes off
yeah.
in the theater. What you realize they're doing is they're going around this big old bonfire where kids are burning their draft cards. And while that's a celebration, it's a terrifying, sad thing because it's a, you know, they're changing their lives. They're deciding right then at that moment, are they going to risk being put in prison? Are they going to be able to live in America anymore? Do they have to drive up to Canada?
Yeah.
These are kids who have to do this. And it's tremendously powerful, I think.
That is true. That is true. And at least the current generation has never had to deal with that issue.
Well, thank God. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say that.
I mean, being forced to go to war,
close.
I was talking about.
It came
yeah.
close.
Oh, yeah. And let's face it, kids who don't have any aspect for a job.
Consignment, right? Isn't that the nice word?
Consignment, yeah. Well, think about kids right now whose only option for a real job or being able to pay for college is having to spend a year or two in Iraq. Or
yeah.
2 years, and then the government says, "No, we're not through with you. We're going to give you one more tour of duty, you know, whether you like it or not."
Next.
So there are kids still
yeah.
who are facing that decision. It's just not every kid. Let's see if I have the Billy Elliot music again. Oh, well, it's West Side Story. Yeah, I guess I'll do the West Side Story intro for our outro. That's good. This
Whoa,
is from
that's crazy.
This is all the intro you need, and you know it's West Side Story.
Yep. See those sharks coming.
Yeah. And this is from the new revival of West Side Story. The CD is out. They also
have the nuevo revival.
El nuevo. ¿Cómo se dice revival? Una.
Revivalito.
Bueno. Muy bien.
Yo soy inteligente.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks also for the critics whom we spoke to in the first hour, Peter Felicia, Iris Dorby, and Simon Saltzman, and Richmond Shepherd. I want to thank my wife for her support, of course, to Adam Kern and to the radio station. And you can hear a bunch of older episodes of the show for free at any time by going to my website, davesgoneby.org. Remember, that's Dave like my name, davesgoneby.org. Well, it just remains for me to thank you so much again for listening to the Tony Special. The Tonys are going to be starting in just 1 minute on CBS, so check them out and see if your predictions, our predictions, were right, wrong, or somewhere in the middle. We leave you with some more West Side Story. I'm Dave Lefkowitz. Thank you again, Adam Kern. Hopefully, see you next year at the Tonys.